Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Loeb & Loeb Webinar Online Behavioral Advertising Conference Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Mr. Ken Florin. Please go ahead, sir.
Hello, everybody. This is Ken Florin. I'm joined by John and we're delighted to have you join us today for our presentation on online behavioral advertising, otherwise known as targeted marketing, behavioral marketing, and some other terms as well. Getting right to it, what today's agenda will involve is discussion about what is behavioral advertising. We'll also touch on the legal landscape right now and where we see things heading. We'll talk a little bit about who the players are in behavioral advertising and how behavioral advertising works, so you have some context and understanding. That'll also give you a sense as, and we'll talk about some of the controversies surrounding behavioral advertising. We'll also talk about the laws, and perhaps more impactful, the guidelines that currently apply to behavioral advertising, although as we move forward, you'll see that the landscape is changing with increasing speed. To the extent we'll have time, we'll also do a Q&A. Before we get into the meat of the presentation, just a few administrative reminders. After today's PowerPoint presentation, we're going to email you the slides. We'll also email you an evaluation form. You can ask questions throughout the presentation by using the chat feature that's on the right-hand side of your screen. We'll have Q&A, as I mentioned, at the end of the presentation. Now, for New York CLE credit, you'll need to write down the code you'll see. It'll be a little bit more than halfway through the presentation. It'll be very clear when it appears, but we'll remind you as well. Okay. First, let's talk a little bit about what online behavioral advertising is. You know, the FTC defines it as tracking consumers' online activities over time to deliver advertising that's targeted to individual consumers' interests. It's essentially the building of a profile utilizing online online activity in order to provide information to advertisers and ad networks that allows for the more efficient dissemination and sharing of advertising. It tends to involve several different parties, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, from the website publisher to the advertiser to the ad network and the agency. Much of the controversy often involves the fact that in many cases it's essentially invisible to the user. Also, although the data that's collected through behavioral advertising is often anonymous, it can be combined with other data, you know, whether through purchases, subscriptions, registrations, or other activities that create personally identifiable and sometimes very sensitive information. Now, when we're talking about behavioral or targeted advertising, we should distinguish that, because the FTC distinguishes it, from contextual and first-party advertising. Contextual advertising refers to how search engines display results in response to search terms, you know, entered into by the user. So when you do a search on Google and the like, you'll see paid results, you'll see other results, and you'll also see ads that reflect what you may have been searching for. That's contextual, and it often does not involve the building of a profile. So it's really not behavioral in that sense. Gmail is another example. You get Gmail for free, but what you're doing as you type words in your emails is, you know, you may see ads that relate to those terms. There's no collection of that information. There's no profile being developed, but that's another example of contextual advertising. That's to be distinguished from first-party or what's also called intra-site behavioral advertising. That's what happens on a single site. You know, so you go on Amazon.com, you make a purchase, you make several purchases, and then, you know, you want to figure out what may be some things that you'd like to read in the future, books that you'd like to buy. And based on your prior results just on that site, Amazon will make suggestions. That's not being shared with third parties. It's simply on that site it's very clear what's happening, and that's not something that the FTC tends to focus on when we're talking about behavioral advertising. Netflix does something rather similar. Some of you may recall a contest that they did recently, which involved, I think it was $1 million payout to the party that was able to establish the best means of predicting the films that people would like to see. So again, that's first party or intra-site behavioral marketing. Let's talk a little bit about the legal landscape and to some extent the lack of a legal landscape. You know, right now, behavioral advertising is very much governed by self-regulatory voluntary guidelines being promulgated by industry, although there's certainly evidence to suggest that this may change. You know, we're talking about behavioral advertising. We're really talking about a situation where technology has far outpaced regulators and legislators' ability to regulate. The technology is moving at hyperspeed, and the legislative response is somewhat slower. Although the FTC is holding a series of roundtables on the privacy challenges posed by 21st century technology, there's a very important one taking place December 7th in Washington, D.C., which will also be available via webcast. The FTC is going to be looking to discuss what are the risks and benefits that arise from collecting, sharing, and using consumer information. Importantly, they're going to be looking at how do consumers commonly understand and what do they expect in terms of how information concerning their activity is collected and used. So they're really going to be focusing on what the consumer expectation is. What does a consumer understand in terms of these activities? And talking about whether or not the existing legal regime and self-regulatory approach is working. So we expect that to be an interesting and lively roundtable. What's very clear, and you know, the FTC has made very clear, that if the industry fails to adopt and comply with the self-regulatory regime, there will be FTC involvement at a much more formal level. We can also expect, and we may expect, regardless of compliance to a self-regulatory regime, legislative activity. You know, Representative Rick Boucher has stated many times his intention to introduce federal legislation governing online behavioral advertising. What he proposes is something that would be very much an opt-in structure as opposed to the opt-out structure that many are using now. Even if there is no federal legislation, it's important to keep in mind that there are laws, and we'll talk about them in a little bit, that certainly are impactful of behavioral advertising. You know, there is, for example, California's computer anti-fraud statutes, which has been used in a recent class action to address certain activities taking place in the behavioral context. Before we go further in terms of the legal landscape, why don't we talk a little bit about who the players are, what behavioral advertising is. This will provide context and give a better understanding as why there might be controversy. First of all, you have the publisher, you know, of the website, you know, that the person, that the viewer is visiting. You know, ads are displayed on the site. You all know what we're talking about. You know, the customer's computer contains a unique IP address, and the customer may, in the course of his activity on the website, provide personal information, again, through registration, subscription, purchase, and the like. The advertiser obviously wants ads placed, you know, on websites that are likely to be appealing to the particular user. That creates efficiency in terms of ad delivery. Then you have the third-party ad service and ad networks that facilitate the delivery. You know, they utilize the technology that transmit and receive and analyze the data to make sure that ads are being served in the most efficient way possible. And of course, ad agencies play a critical role, as they do in other media, playing the middle person between advertiser and publisher. Excuse me. You know, in terms of how it specifically works, you know, typically what you have is third-party ad servers and ad networks, you know, placing cookies on computers, and those cookies are used to collect information about the customer, such as where the customer has visited, and what the customer has done when on a particular site. Again, as I mentioned before, the customer also provides information through registrations, subscriptions, purchases, and the like. The third-party ad servers and networks, again, collect and analyze this data to determine what's the most efficient means of delivering ads. What's the best way to make sure that an advertiser's ads are being delivered to someone who's likely to open the ad and find it useful. So why use behavioral advertising? You know, why take on the possible controversy? Why proceed with it at all? You know, in terms of the collection of data, as we talked about, the data is collected from the customers and potential customers to create these profiles. And ultimately, the goal is to deliver ads that are targeted to a consumer's specific interests. What's often not talked about when folks are focusing on the controversy of behavioral advertising is that there is an important benefit. You know, customers are provided ads that hopefully they find meaningful. So if you're not interested in buying a home, you're not being inundated with mortgage ads. You know, if you're going on a trip, you are getting ads from airlines and ad agencies and resorts that may be of interest to you. So there is that benefit, although it's rarely discussed. You know, what tends to be focused on, you know, is the controversy. And it stems, you know, from, you know, at least one of the issues is the information, you know, that's gleaned from a computer can be associated with information about a particular person. So it tends not to be, or it can be, not just anonymous information. You know, companies can use the behavioral advertising to collect all manner of information, but it can be very sensitive information. That can include financial information, health information, or information from children. And there's obviously a great deal of sensitivity around that. You know, information collected from a computer user's activity on a website, you know, can also be used to deliver ads and is often used to deliver ads on a third-party, unaffiliated website. More to the point, you know, what the controversy tends to be about is that people don't know what's going on. Yeah, even though they might find it of interest, they might be looking for a car and getting ads for the types of cars that they're looking at, they don't know why they're getting it. It takes place largely out of sight, and certainly that's created the attention of privacy groups, consumer groups that want transparency. You know, consumers, for the most part, are not being told what's going on, or at least that's what the privacy groups suggest. They say that information in a privacy policy isn't sufficient to give people true advance notice and the opportunity to decide whether or not they want to participate in these programs. What privacy groups want is a very express, clear opt-in. And we'll be talking about where the FTC seems to be going, which would certainly suggest that it has listened to and continues to listen to the concerns of privacy and consumer groups. Politicians certainly are mindful of a recent survey that was conducted over the telephone, which showed that 2/3 of Americans are actually opposed to online tracking. Now, again, many of them may not know exactly what it means to be tracked and what the benefits or risks may be, for that matter. But 2/3, so you can see the appeal. There seems to be little risk of a legislator taking on behavioral advertising when only 1/3 of survey respondents seem to find it at all appealing. Let me give you an example of a particularly controversial type of behavioral advertising. It's called deep packeting inspection, and it involves the interception and collection of data that's contained in the data packets that are transmitted between a computer and an ISP. You know, there was a short-lived trial I'll talk about now, which evidences all things that can go wrong, sometimes actually do go wrong. It involved Nebuad and Charter Communications. It called for the collection of this deep packet information from consumers for the purposes of developing profiles on these consumers and creating a very valuable and useful ad network. Charter allowed subscribers to not participate by opting out of having the ads displayed. But the opt-out, importantly, did not allow subscribers to opt out of having their data intercepted. So they opted out of getting the ads, but they didn't opt out of having the information intercepted. That was very, very controversial. So this was in May 2008. Within a couple of months, Congress was holding hearings on deep packet inspection in July of 2008. So as we've seen in many cases, you know, sometimes the response, you know, at least the short-term response can be swift. It may not result in legislation, but hearings. By the fall of 2008, Charter had decided that they were not going to implement this deep packet inspection. The CEO of NebuAd quit, and the company decided it was going to focus on other types of initiatives. To make matters worse and to sort of seal the deal that this was a very bad situation, in November, NebuAd was sued, a class action suit, alleging that the deep packet inspection program that they were embarking on violated federal and state computer tampering laws and wiretapping laws. So not a positive experience by any means. A very similar situation faced Virgin Media, BT, and TalkTalk when they entered into an agreement, much like the NebuAd deal, with Form to implement deep packet inspection. Like that situation, it allowed subscribers to opt out of receiving the ads, but again, and importantly, not to having the data intercepted. Not surprisingly, privacy advocates objected, and Virgin Media decided they too would not proceed. Notwithstanding that, the European Commission announced it was launching an investigation alleging that that the UK had failed to protect consumers' privacy interests with regard to this deep packet inspection. As the controversy has brewed, we have seen Congress becoming more and more interested in pursuing it. I mentioned Rick Boucher's potential introduction of a bill. Before that, Edward Markey, Democrat out of Massachusetts, had sent letters to 33 internet and broadband media companies, including Google, Microsoft, and AT&T. He indicated in his letters that he favored an opt-in approach. He said consumers deserve very clear and detailed disclosure and a meaningful opt-in to consent for use for the purposes of behavioral marketing. That is not, as I mentioned, followed up with any legislation. States have also begun to be interested in legislating the restriction of behavioral advertising. Although, most of the bills that we've seen provide for an opt-out regime. So one bill, one state bill would require that consumers be given adequate notice of how a third-party advertiser operates and very clear and conspicuous means of opting out, but it's not an opt-in. The bill would prohibit merging anonymous online data with personally identifiable information without prior consent. Consumer groups are probably pushing the hardest. In September 2009, a number of such groups, including Consumers Union and Electronic Frontier Foundation, sent letters to Congress. They asked that legislation be put in place that was very much an opt-in approach. They also want it to be prohibited. They want prohibited the collection of data from children under 13. They also want there to be particular protections for sensitive personal information. They also want to create a limit in terms of the time during which a company would be allowed to collect and use data, and they'd want to limit that for 24 hours from collection. They'd want companies to be required to inform users about the request inform users upon request of the scope and details of the data that a company has amassed on the individual. An individual should be able to obtain data about them, the data that has been obtained from the ad network or publisher upon request. Importantly, they'd want a private right of action against companies for violating behavioral advertising laws. They also want the FTC to establish a registry, much like a do-not-call registry for online behavioral advertising. So far, the FTC has not found that idea particularly compelling. I think it's as much a resource issue as anything. They also want no preemption of state laws. So if a state were to come up with a more restrictive behavioral advertising law, they would not want that to be preempted. So what are the potential risks? I mean, we've talked about the FTC. You know, even without legislation, the FTC Act prohibits unfair and deceptive practices, and this could include failure to provide adequate disclosures or notify consumers of changes in privacy policies that might be impacted by behavioral advertising. You know, to the extent information is collected from children under 13, you may have a COPPA issue. You know, there's also, as I mentioned earlier, potential violation of state privacy and data security laws. You know, California is one state, for example, that has very strict privacy laws protecting, among other things, financial and medical information. There are also existing state and federal computer tampering and wiretap statutes. As I mentioned, NebuAd has been sued under those statutes, notwithstanding the fact that there aren't specific federal and state laws particularly and specifically applicable to behavioral advertising. You know, there's no question that the European Union is looking very closely at this, and to the extent the data involves data from Europe, we could certainly be talking about issues under the European Union data protection laws. And then, of course, you know, for those of you at brands, the public relations implications can never be ignored. They're also of critical importance. Okay, so we are at the moment in time where New Yorkers should be writing down this code in order to get CLE credit. This also marks the time that John Umm will take over and discuss some of the guidelines and impactful laws. Thanks.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is John Umm, associate at the Advanced Media and Technology Group here at Loeb & Loeb. First, we're going to turn to some of the self-regulatory guidelines and what's out there currently that that apply to behavioral advertising. And first, we will look to the FTC staff report. This is a report that was released in February 2009, and this report contains the recommended guidelines for the advertising industry that the FTC had prepared in terms of guidance for the advertising industry so that it can create behavioral advertising campaigns that really comported with consumer expectations and how the FTC believes that companies should be engaging in behavioral advertising. It's interesting to note that this report was actually it took quite a bit of time for the FTC to come out with this report because the first town hall meetings occurred in November of 2007, and after the first shoe dropped, everyone was waiting for the other one to drop, and it took until February 2009 for the FTC to actually come around and release their report. Now, this report, does it have the force of law? No, it doesn't. It's not necessarily law at this point. Right now, the staff report is going out to notify the advertising industry that this is clearly on the FTC radar, and they want industry to clean up their act before they step in with more clear rules. So this is really a warning from the FTC and an indication of where they want to see industry go. So what we can see from the report is that this is something that everyone should read and should really get a sense of how the FTC views behavioral advertising and what it believes to be behavioral advertising in compliance with existing laws and consumer expectation, and that by doing this, by implementing these principles, that industry can really stave off further interference from government. So the FTC staff report contains four governing principles in terms of behavioral advertising. And first is transparency and control. Second, it's reasonable security and limited use. Third is material changes to privacy policies. And fourth is sensitive data. So first, transparency and control. What does that mean? That means that consumers should be given clear notice as to behavioral advertising, how it's being conducted, and just even the fact that it's occurring. As we discussed earlier, a lot of consumers had no idea that behavioral advertising was occurring under the covers when they go to one website and they see an ad that pops up that seems to be somewhat related to a website that they just came from. So that was something that consumers may not have known about, but the FTC says that it's important for consumers to understand that it's occurring. The control aspect means that the FTC wants consumers to have control over whether they can participate or not participate in behavioral advertising. So they're saying that consumers should have the ability to say, no, I don't want to participate and I don't want you to collect my my data for purposes of behavioral advertising. And again, this is not referring to anything that's directly connected to personally identifiable information, but this is just even non-personally identifiable information, so that that they want to give consumers choice to not have that information collected and used in that fashion. Secondly, so the reasonable security and limited use. The FTC has come out time and time again to say that companies need to provide reasonable security for the information that they collect from consumers, that it's not a reasonable defense to say that I didn't know or that that they didn't implement even reasonable security measures such as firewalls, passwords. These are the things that the FTC wants to see all companies implement across the board. And as this is not specifically referring to personally identifiable information, the FTC is saying that all companies should protect this information. So that's what they mean by reasonable security. Secondly, in terms of the second principle, they also want use to be limited to the purposes in which it was collected. And this is similar to the EU data protection directives, which call for information to only be used for the purposes in which they're collected. So they don't want to see behavioral advertising data collected for one purpose and then to be used for an entirely different purpose. Third, in terms of material changes to privacy policies, the FTC has come out pretty strongly, and they've let companies know that their position in terms of changes to privacy policies through enforcement actions and other forms of communications. And what the FTC says is that any changes to a privacy policy that are material cannot be retroactively applied to previously collected data without receiving the consumer's affirmative express consent. So what does that mean? That means that if you collected personal information, or in this case, this would be behavioral targeting and not necessarily personally identifiable, if you've collected this information under a privacy policy that's stated that you would not share it or use it in a certain way, if you want to change that privacy policy, you need to get affirmative express consent. So that is what the FTC is saying. And fourth, in terms of sensitive data, the FTC wants to point out that I think what everyone understands is that sensitive data is the type of data that you don't want released without you knowing about it. And some examples of sensitive data is health information, financial information, and information collected from children. And what the FTC is saying through that principle is that a company needs to obtain the affirmative express consent before collecting that type of information for purposes of behavioral advertising. So those are the four principles that the FTC has set forth in its staff report. Now, in response to the FTC staff report, the advertising industry has gotten together and they've created their own self-regulatory principles for online behavioral advertising. And these groups include the four A's, the Direct Marketing Association, the Interactive Advertising Bureau. So these are very large groups that represent a large number of advertising companies out there. Now, in terms of what these self-regulatory industry-issued self-regulatory principles provide, they're somewhat similar to the FTC principles, but in some of the ways they apply the principles, it's somewhat different than what the FTC calls for. And in general, the industry guidelines call for the same notice to consumers, choice of whether they can participate, clear uses of how the data will be used, and an easy to use mechanism to opt out and to express that choice. And even before the FTC staff report came out and before industry groups have gotten together to create their own self-regulatory principles, the Network Advertising Initiative, also known as NAI, released a code of conduct in 2008. And the NAI represents a lot of the companies that are actually involved in third-party ad serving, and they've been involved in this space for quite some time, going back to even 2000, where there was a lot of controversy in terms of the use of cookies and the sharing of information between different advertisers. So the NAI actually updated their previous code of conduct in 2008, and within that code of conduct, they also address things such as transparency, choice, notice, and even privacy policy changes and the collection of sensitive data. And in comparing the three approaches, we've just laid out a number of different points that reflect what the FTC has set forth in their principles and how they've been applied throughout the other two approaches. And I think most importantly, what's important for everyone to know is that in terms of transparency, the position of the FTC, which has been readily observable through looking at their enforcement actions and other things that the FTC has released in communications, is that having any kind of terms within a privacy policy, within terms of use, within an end-user license agreement, that these things are not necessarily sufficient to give consumers notice about what's occurring. And the FTC has come out pretty clearly, especially in the staff report, to say that that in terms of notice, that if something is really material to the consumer, and it's something that the consumer would really, something that the consumer might actually change their behavior because they had understood a certain activity to occur, that needs to be more prominent than just within a privacy policy or terms of use or an end-user license agreement. And this presents a big challenge for companies online, since to have a large body of text above a submit button is neither useful nor is it helpful for consumers. So the real challenge for companies is to create ways that consumers could actually receive more clearer notice of certain material terms without having them only within a privacy policy or other type of website disclosure. So that is something that's really important that the FTC has come out about, and in the future I think we'll be seeing more and more of that approach being applied to enforcement action. And we'll turn to existing laws that could apply to behavioral advertising. So these are laws that are currently out there, and they've been enforced, or they could possibly be used to or enforced against people who are engaging in behavioral advertising. Uh, The FTC Act, which is the federal act which gives the FTC its power, it prohibits unfair and deceptive acts and practices by companies. And in terms of enforcement actions, we've seen a lot of enforcement by the FTC in the past few years, and especially with the new regime that has come in, the new administration. We've seen a lot of movement here, and we don't think that that would change anytime too soon. But just some of the examples of some of the specific acts that the FTC has found to be either deceptive or unfair are companies not complying with a posted privacy policy, changing a privacy policy and applying a new privacy policy to information that was previously collected, the failure for a company to adequately safeguard data, and this could be as onerous as companies just dumping papers containing personal information in a dumpster, or it could be something very, very sophisticated in terms of not having enough security to prevent a possibly sophisticated hacking attack. So that really can run the spectrum in terms of how it's applied. Also, the FTC has brought enforcement actions for companies that claim to provide adequate security for data when, in fact, they have failed to do so. And companies should be very careful about what's contained within the privacy policy or the representations being made in terms of their securing of information that's collected, because we've seen a lot of enforcement actions that show that you really need to be accurate about what you're representing, or else you could be found to be engaging in an unfair or deceptive act. Another type of action is failing to adequately disclose what data is collected and for what purpose. So the FTC has come out in certain cases against companies who have not sufficiently disclosed what types of information they've collected, or have failed to really disclose to the consumer how that information was being used. More recently, earlier this month, the FTC came out with a number of enforcement actions against companies who were actually at one time certified under the U.S. EU Data Protection Safe Harbor Program, which essentially allows companies within the U.S. to receive personal information from residents within the EU. But a lot of these companies were actually certified under the Safe Harbor Program but had allowed their certification to lapse. And going back to the representation and seeing that they were no longer certified, the FTC brought out and settled six specific cases of this particular deceptive act. There are a number of laws, I believe in every state and definitely on the federal level, involving computer tampering. And what computer tampering is accessing a computer without authorization, or accessing a computer exceeding the authorization that is given. So this would be the case, a clear example of this would be an individual hacking into a network to obtain credit card information. That's a very clear example. But more maybe subtle examples is perhaps going to a website and signing up for a service using fraudulent information and possibly being in violation of the website's terms and conditions by providing false information to register for the service. These laws are very, very broadly written, and for that reason they could be applied in a variety of different situations. And for that reason, these types of laws could and have been used against companies who have been collecting information from computers which the people who have information collected believe to be unauthorized. So in terms of behavioral advertising, we could see the argument being made that a company that's engaged in behavioral advertising is accessing a computer without authorization. For example, if a if a company that's engaged in behavioral advertising is collecting information off a computer and the customer didn't know about that fact, then that could bring rise to that type of claim. And we've even seen this used recently in the MySpace case, where the prosecutor in this case, which involved a suicide of a girl because of internet bullying, and the prosecutor in that case had brought the cause of action, or had claimed that the mother had violated the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act by creating a false account on MySpace. So we see that prosecutors are willing to use this law. There's also the Federal Wiretap Act that prohibits any company or individual from intercepting communications between two parties. And one exception or one defense to a claim of under the Wiretap Act is that one of the parties actually consented to that collection of that information. And for that reason, Ken had previously discussed about Nebuad probably wouldn't be in violation of the Wiretap Act, because the company was part of, actually agreed to have that communication collected. But that's another type of law that could be used to say that behavioral targeting is actually indeed a criminal act. Aside from those laws that could directly apply to behavioral advertising, there are other laws that aren't necessarily as direct in terms of their application, but they do involve the collection of personal information from individuals. And to the extent behavioral advertising information is combined with that person identifiable information, then these laws could be impactful on behavioral advertising. And some of these examples are COPPA, which is the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, which applies to any website or online service that collects personal information from children under the age of 13. There's also federal privacy laws that, such as the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, the Federal Credit Reporting Act, and these laws generally apply to the collection of personal information by financial institutions and the ability for that financial institution to use that personal information, typically for marketing purposes. There are also state data security laws, which could come into play if the information that you've collected is combined with personal information and is then subsequently subject to some type of hacking or unauthorized access. There are also state privacy laws, such as the California privacy laws, that also govern the collection of personal information from California residents. And if you're doing anything on the international scale, especially anything that impacts the EU, there's the EU Data Protection Directive, which provides a broad privacy regime for any information that's being collected and used and shared by collected from EU residents. So, finally, what's next? As Ken had discussed, the FTC is holding another roundtable on December 7th, and this roundtable will really focus on what the FTC, what consumers expect in terms of privacy, in terms of behavioral advertising. It's really a follow-up to the staff report, and the FTC wants to hear just consumers, industry groups, companies that are engaged in behavioral advertising. They want to hear what they're saying so that they can properly balance all the different concerns that are involved. The advertising industry will continue to develop its self-regulatory program, and they'll come out with a program, I believe, soon, in maybe the first quarter of 2010, that will put into play in more concrete ways how to comply with their self-regulatory principles. There's also possible introduction of state and federal legislation, so that is still very much a possibility in the next session. So we may see some activity in that regard, especially if there might be some enforcement actions or some type of big headline activities involving behavioral advertising in the near future. There's more of a likelihood that it could result in some type of legislative action. And lastly, we should always remember that the FTC is monitoring online behavioral advertising practices. Clearly, they're very much aware of the practice, and even in June of this year, they had brought a case against Sears and Kmart, which involved the downloading of a piece of software that did track online behaviors, and a consumer did this with consent and with some notice, but the FTC felt that the notice wasn't sufficient and the types of information that they were collecting were not adequately disclosed because it resided deep within within the license agreement rather than more prominently. And this is what we had previously discussed about the fact that having a disclosure within a website document may not be sufficient in terms of disclosing that practice to a consumer.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We're going to try to keep this, within the hour time slot. We do have a couple of questions. One question that was presented was, are all companies who do behavioral advertising automatically bound by the guidelines, or are they voluntary? They are voluntary. They're self-regulatory. But the FTC has made clear that they reserve the right to bring enforcement actions against those who do not comply, and I don't think we'd be surprised at all to see that sort of activity taking place. Another question is, where do we see things going? An opt-in approach? I think very much so. I think an opt-in approach has already been promulgated in the guidelines, both the industry and FTC guidelines. I think we're also going to be looking to see whether or not consumer expectation, regardless of opt-in or whether there was an opt-in, becomes a very clear feature of whatever regime ultimately takes hold, so that the consumer needs to understand what exactly is taking place. Another question was, can I get information on the FTC roundtable, which takes place December 7th? You definitely can. We'll be providing a summary of anything that comes out of that particular roundtable. We'll also let people know how they can participate in the webinar or attend. I think that is it. We've managed to take care of it within the time frame. We thank all of you for joining us, and we look forward to speaking with you soon. Take care.
That concludes today's teleconference. Thank you all for your participation.